Yeah, baby. It's episode 101 of Ask the Inspector, the lightning round on Tuesday, September 26th. Jeff Norman with our favorite weapons inspector, Scott Ritter. And here's not a question, but a compliment. Let's start with this. Let's do something a little different. Why not? Jackie Le Chevalier in Argentina, one of our regulars. And she says, absolutely powerful interview with Malcolm Byrne. I've heard you many times say that war breaks people, and I always wondered how it had affected you. Now I understand everything, and you've doubled my respect for you. No questions from Jackie today, just saying what needs to be said. And I concur. That's why I wanted to start with that. That's one of your best pieces. My only regret, Scott, is that it's the lightning round today and we don't have too much time. So my humble request is that we mention a little bit about it today, but we also talk about it more Friday night, if that would be okay with you. We're talking about what you call your addiction.
Well, I mean, it is an addiction, I guess. But A, it wasn't an easy article to write. B, I didn't want to write it. But C, I've sort of made a commitment to be honest with you and with the audience and with Malcolm. And when Malcolm said he wanted to bring me back, and then he was asking for, an anti-war theme, I started to say, okay, let's go down that track. But then I just remember, again, I blame you, Jeff. I blame you.
When in doubt, just blame me. And that's a very good rule of thumb. But what did I do wrong this time?
Well, you talked me into doing this damn show. So you put me on this program here where right here I have this comment section. And Marina has warned me from the start, don't read the comments. Leave them alone. Because sometimes, I mean, there's people who say hurtful things, and to all you people who say hurtful things, I don't really give a flying shit. But every once in a while, somebody says something that's insightful. And some guy called me out because we were talking about, waging peace and all that. And I guess when I say waging peace, my eyes show a calmness and all that. But then we talked about the war, and I started dissecting tactics, and he broke the code. He said, you love war. And he's damn right, because it's the truth. I mean, it's just be straight up honest about it. I love war. I love fighting. I love violence. It's my thing. It's my shtick. It's what I did. It's what I do better than just about anybody in the world. Not the violence part. There's people out there that can kill me in a heartbeat. But I'm good at organizing violence. I'm good at executing violence. I'm good at preparing for violence. War is where I thrive. Chaos. I thrive in chaos. And it's a horrible thing. It's an addiction. And so then I started getting in the business of how do you explain that? And I drew upon some experience with the fire horses because I've been planning on writing a book someday. I got a lot of books in the works on the Poughkeepsie Fire Department. I really like the Poughkeepsie Fire Department, City of Poughkeepsie. I had a really good relationship with these guys and the history of their fire department, the conversion, the transition from volunteer to professional, the transition from horse-drawn carriages to motorized carriages. But the horses were something because they were very proud of their horses and their history with horses. The fact that the firehouse that they worked in, it's been closed down now. They've modernized it. But you could see where the horses were stabled. You could see where the horses were fed. You could see where the horses, the harnesses would come down. They talked about then. They talked about the horses and what and how proud they were. But then I started doing research into horses because you like to tell the backstory. And I found out that actually being a fire horse killed the horses because they were asked to do things that their bodies weren't designed to do psychologically. Fire horses are afraid of fire, but these horses were trained to be near fire, to be calmed by fire. They became addicted to fire, addicted to the adrenaline rush, the addiction to being harnessed, driven down the street, running to that which they're supposed to be afraid of, their bodies, the stress being suppressed by an overdose of cortisol. And I was reading that and I went, holy, I'm a damn fire horse. I mean, that's the truth. So I wrote the article, came up with three songs, and that was that. Like I said, it wasn't an easy article to write.
No, it was very personal and very moving, and people are reacting quite strongly to it. And if people want to hear the, well, first of all, I just flashed the article, but I'll also tell you how you can hear the interview. That's at scottritterextra.com. That's where you can read what Scott wrote in preparation for his appearance on The Long Way Around, which is a show hosted by Malcolm Byrne. And what he does is he has people from the realm of, you know, public affairs type guests come on, and he asks them to pick songs that are meaningful to them. Scott really gives his all when he does this. This is the second time you're on the show. And he really, well, yeah, I think one of them wasn't, I thought they were, did it in two installments. Was that, did you actually do it?
No,
two different?
No, they did. They did two separate.
Oh, they did two separate. Okay. Playlists, yeah. So this is from Malcolm Byrne's Substack. That's where you can check out the actual interview with him. And there is the address. So I highly recommend that. Only three songs this time, though. You guys stretched it out.
Well, I mean,
I was kidding you. No, it's actually
no. Malcolm. He said that he had trouble with YouTube on terms of the same thing we've had problems with music clips, the copyright violations.
Right.
So he asked not to, keep the big names out of it, because of course I was, Bruce Springsteen's Darkness on the Edge of Town is a song that hits a lot of those chords that I'm talking about. And there's some others. So it's a good
thing Simon and Garfunkel aren't very well known, and they never recorded.
Apparently you don't get the same level of ding on that one. And Lou Reed's Heroin, I'm glad he didn't have a camera on me during the interview, because look, I can't listen to that song without getting hyped up. And then of course the last song was the worst of all, because it I don't think too many people know the song.
No, and I'm a big Charles Grodin fan, so I'm surprised that never made it onto my radar.
Yeah, but it's from the show The Patriot. Again, if you guys have Amazon, go get it, go watch it. It's the best TV series made ever. And if you want to just get in the mind of, I mean,
now when you say it's the best show ever, you're including the Golden Girls, right?
Well, my wife would take umbrage because she's a big Golden Girls fan. But look, for me, I mean, because people ask me, my favorite book, it's Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. Why? Because it gets into just how much of a mind fuck the intelligence world is. And if you've been in the intelligence world, you just read the book and you just identify with everything that's going on. And while I was never a CIA assassin, I hung out with CIA assassins and worked with them and worked in that world long enough to, you just watch The Patriot, and it is just one mind fuck after another mind fuck. And you look at this guy, and if you're like me, you identify with the guy, because you just realize, you just sit there and you see him get hit with just shit happening all over the place. His world falling apart. Marriage, Marina, our marriage isn't falling apart, but she'll be the first one to acknowledge that me going away all the time, not telling her what I was doing, is not an easy thing to do. And so you watch a show, and I just watched it, and I was just like, holy crap, this is like an auto fucking biography sometimes. Mm. And then they played that song, and it just rips your guts out. At least it rips mine.
Yeah, ironic, because Charles Grodin is such a funny guy, but that's how it goes.
Well, I mean, they just use that because there's an important aspect of this movie he talks about in the song, but based upon the movie Midnight Run, there's this bike race where it's run by bike messengers, and you have to basically eliminate all reflection on your bike and ride at night without lights and reflection, and you have to weave in between cars. And he does this race, but whereas most people try to dodge the cars, he literally just drives right through the internet, just waiting for the cars to hit him. He goes through train tracks, he goes head on, and he doesn't care. He takes his hand off the wheel, and he's just like, kill me, because he basically is at the point in his life where everything was just so complicated, so fucked up, that he was just hoping to get hit by a car so that it would all go away.
Mm. By the way, Midnight Run is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Well, there. So I introduced you to a peripheral.
Yes, you did.
Tangent.
And we are developing a new podcast that will be in addition to what we're doing that's about Scott's favorite movies. So stay tuned. Stay tuned for details about that. This is the lightning round. Scott answers every question in 3 minutes or less on Tuesdays at this time. And our first question comes from a Jungle Gin in the U.S. province of Australia. What was the real cause of the Hungarian Revolution in 1956?
Well, there you go. Just a random question that requires,
You mean when you woke up this morning, you weren't expecting that question? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I can honestly tell you that that question is took me by surprise. I'll give it my best shot. The Hungarian Revolution of 1956, what was the real cause? I think the real cause was the fact that if you take a look at Hungary and you take a look at the role it played in the interwar period between World War I, World War II, development politically, sort of a dictatorship. It fought alongside the Germans in World War II against the Russians, and then halfway through had a change of heart and flipped the script. And it was a country with a lot of internal dynamics. Also, at the same time as 1956, you had problems in East Germany. You had problems throughout the Warsaw Pact. Basically, these nations were rebelling against what they felt to be Soviet domination, Soviet oppression. They had certain political elements that, as the nations rebuilt themselves in the post World War II era. There was talk about democracy, there was talk about this, but it was all suppressed in favor of the Communist Party. And so I think what you saw in Hungary was there's a certain element that rebelled against the oppression of the Soviet dominated Hungarian government. There was it's more complicated than that. Thank God, this is one of those ones I'm like, only 3 minutes. So I can really simplify the question because then I don't have to dig
it's
deep.
Not your fault.
Because here's the deal. I love this question. I really do love this question. And I'd like to treat it with the respect that it deserves. So could we please put this question on the loquacious Friday night? And I will actually spend some time so I can give this guy the answer I hope he is hoping for, but I can't give him the 3 minutes.
All right, we can do that. And will you allow me to ask you some questions about your article on Friday? For the same reason
always ask the questions, Jeff. Whether I choose to answer them is another question.
All right, we'll see how that goes. Well, hold on. Let me do it a different way here. It can bomb in Australia. Once again, Australia. I hear Colonel McGregor on Judge Knapp always carry on about the Chinese infiltrating our southern border and the Chinese stealing our intellectual property. How true is it? Or is he just being a rabid Chinese hater? That Judge Knapp, that Chinese hater.
Well, I think he's calling Colonel McGregor.
Oh, Colonel McGregor. Yeah, sorry.
I don't know Colonel McGregor personally. I don't know. I mean, I know a little bit about his biography. He's a man of great physical and moral courage, demonstrated on the battlefield. And again, I think anybody who read the article knows that I put a lot of weight into battlefield courage because I really truly think it's one of the few honest tests of men being men, because you're tested in every way possible. And that's probably why anyways, enough of that crap. But I hold him in high regard. His political beliefs, I think, are far more conservative than me. I think that he has a disdain for China. I would imagine, I have to go back and research, but I would imagine that prior to this Ukrainian conflict, he had a similar disdain for Russia. But I think he recognizes stupidity when he sees it on this policy. Look, China doesn't need to infiltrate our southern border. They just flow in anyways through visas and immigration. We have an open economic relationship with China, despite all of the sanctions. theft of intellectual property. I would just ask Colonel McGregor to reflect for a moment on what the NSA does to China. You know, the National Security Agency infiltrates every Chinese company worthy of note. We steal everything the Chinese do. We steal their technology. We try to infiltrate them. And if that's the world you want to live in, then understand that turnaround's fair play. And are the Chinese stealing our intellectual property? You're damn right they are. Do I wish they weren't? Yes. But am I going to sit there and call them out as evil when we do it to them? No. If we want to play this, if we're going to play this game, it's big boy rules, you know. And you steal, you're going to get stolen from. Chinese just happen to be doing it pretty damn good. We need to do a better job of protecting our intellectual property. But to sit here and call them out is just it's the epitome of whine, you know, a whiner, a wimp. A loser. I'm not calling Colonel McGregor that, but I'm just saying that he should reflect long and hard on throwing out these accusations to China when we do far worse to China. And again, the racism of, you know, the Chinese are flowing across the southern border. No, Mexicans, Hondurans, Guatemalans, Nicaraguans are flowing across the southern border. Chinese aren't flowing across the southern border.
Next question comes from Robison X in Barcelona. As recent examples, Putin has offered North Korea rocket and space technology, and the Americans are stirring up things in Armenia. By what other means can the U.S. and NATO and Russia ratchet up the horizontal escalation on each other?
Well, first of all, you make it sound like it's this is an equitable game, meaning that it's tit for tat, quid pro quo, and any other thing I could throw out there that means equitable. But I was getting a little ahead of myself intellectually there. You threw me off with that damn article, so my brain isn't
well, that horse metaphor is as good as metaphors get, so we won't expect you to duplicate that.
Well, yeah, that was one that was a long time in the working too, so you know, let's just start with this. How many miles is between the United States and Armenia? Pro hint, thousands. All right. How many miles separate Russia from North Korea? The answer, none. They share a border. So right off the bat, you see this isn't an equitable arrangement. The United States is going out of its way to do. What is the historical connectivity between the United States and Armenia? Do they have the equivalent of the Russian conquest of the Southern Caucasus? Do they have the equivalent of the Armenian-Azerbaijani War of 1918-1920, stopped by Soviet intervention? Do the Karabakh Council that created the, you know, the reality that turned into Nagorno-Karabakh, which is it the thing? The United States doesn't have a freaking thing to do with any of that. Nothing. Russia has everything to do with that. So America's literally going in and stirring up anthills in Russia's backyard. That's what America does. For Russia to go to North Korea, which has been targeted by the United States by sanctions, and the United States has a regime change policy against North Korea that can't be implemented because North Korea has opted to have a nuclear deterrent. The United States is threatening preemptive strike, which means North Korea has a need for intelligence satellites that can look at American, South Korean, Japanese force dispositions and get real-time tip-offs against any potential first strike so that North Korea can prepare a deterrent force to prevent that from happening, thereby saving the world from thermonuclear war. But they're having trouble with that. So Russia's saying, hey, we can help you with that. That's actually, as an American, I'm like, thank you. Because I would love nothing more than the North Koreans to be cognizant of all the potential threat scenarios so that they don't launch a preemptive nuclear strike. I believe in living until tomorrow. So that's the difference. Russia is a force of stability in this world. America is a force of instability. There is nothing we do that's good. If you think we're going over to Armenia because we love the Armenians, we care for the Armenians, just reflect on what we've done for the Ukrainians. And that's what American love's all about.
All right. Thanks to our YouTube audience for joining us for a portion of this version of the Lightning Round. If you would like to keep up with us, visit the website at scottritter.us. And at this time, we will say so long to our friends on YouTube.
Now, can they still watch? I don't understand how this works.
They can watch, but not on YouTube. We're continuing on Rumble and Twitch and Twitter and Facebook.
So if somebody was on YouTube, they have to switch over to one of these other platforms.
That's exactly right. It's kind of awkward. I'm not happy about it, but we're just trying to figure out the best way we can deal with this.
Well, YouTube has to quit censoring us. I mean, yeah.
I wish they would. So I don't think this is going particularly well, but I'm not sure that how to do it any better than this. So we'll.
You're doing a great job, Jeff. None of this is your fault. It's all the fault of YouTube.
Well, that I agree with. The next question comes from Dr. Debt in Kitchener, Ontario. Which now today is there's news that just broke. So these questions, you got to understand, came in before the resignation of the speaker was announced. But here's a couple of questions in a row that are similar. So let's just see. And actually, there were several other questions about the Canadian situation also. So here's two that kind of represent what's on folks' minds. Wish for Scott to comment on the Canadian Parliament giving two standing ovations to a Nazi collaborator from Ukraine due to lack of World War II history. Trudeau and Christine Freeland did it again, making Canadians look foolish in the eyes of the world. Jeff, in Quebec, in terms of geopolitics, do you have any thoughts about the House of Commons in Canada honoring Yaroslav Hunka, a former member of the 14th Waffen Grenadier Division of the SS, a Nazi military unit in the Ukraine?
Well, first of all, I think we need to understand a couple of things. One, the 14th Galatian Division of the Waffen SS is a well-known unit. To say you're Canadian and to be unfamiliar with that, the history of that unit, is to be like saying you're an American and you're unfamiliar with, the Tuskegee Airmen or some incident like that from our past. I'm not saying everybody should be cognizant of the Tuskegee Airmen, but, it shows if you go, I don't know who they are, it means you just don't know anything about American history, especially the part of history that's uncomfortable. The 14th Galatian Division of the Waffen SS was transferred almost intact from Europe to Canada in the aftermath of the Second World War. These are hardcore Nazis. They're not Ukrainian nationalists. They're Nazis. They wore the uniform of the Nazis. They took instructions from the Nazis. And under those instructions, they killed thousands of Jews, tens of thousands of Poles, tens of thousands of Russian civilians. They're murderous thugs. Every single one of them should be put up against the wall and shot. And I know this gentleman is 98 years old, but the last time I checked is there is no statute of limitation on murder. So hang him by the neck until dead. Don't give him a standing ovation. Tear down every monument to the 14th Division that exists in Canada today. And yet I understand another monument just went up. The idea that this was done somehow surreptitiously is absurd. I have spoken, I've given testimony before the Canadian Parliament in the past, and the amount of paperwork and security that had to go into me getting through those doors, access to these members of Parliament in their parliamentary building, is astounding. Now you have heads of state, you have Trudeau there, you have Zelensky there. So the level of security is even more. So the idea that this 98-year-old man just sort of was wheeled through in a wheelchair and just tucked there, stupid. They knew exactly who he was and why he was there. That's why the camera was able to pan to him and show him. He was cleared in advance. They knew his history in advance. They knew who he was in advance. This is all a lie, a huge lie. The Speaker of the House knew exactly what was going on. So did Justin Trudeau. So did every member of Parliament. For them to suddenly go, oh, we didn't know. What they're embarrassed about is, I bet you they didn't realize it was Yom Kippur, because unless you were Jewish, they just don't care. It's not like they sat there and go, this is one of the most sacred days in the Jewish calendar. We should show deference to our Jewish colleagues, and maybe we should have a moment of silence on Yom Kippur to talk about the significance. Say they brought a damn Nazi into the thing and gave him a standing ovation, a man who personally pulled the trigger on a rifle that killed a Jew. Okay? He killed Jews. He killed Jews. And they gave him a standing ovation. Canada should go fucking be flushed down the toilet of life. Sorry, Canadians, but your government sucks and you suck for continuing to vote them into power. Chrystia Freeland, put her up against the wall with him. She's a Nazi through and through. Not only a Nazis would witness
this hyena's crime. Commit this hyena's crime.
All right. So now we're on Rumble. That wouldn't go over so well on YouTube. I think we switched over.
We dodged the bullet.
Yeah. People are asking us, why are you doing that? There you go. All right. Enjoy the uncensored version of Ask the Inspector. Mike from Michigan, what impact will the upcoming rainy season have on the state of the Ukrainian military? I understand that Russia is currently grinding through the Ukrainian manpower, but would the next few months allow Ukraine to rebuild their forces to a certain extent?
Look, if there any operational pause will give the Ukrainians a chance to rest and regroup and rebuild. This is why I would be surprised if Russia went into an operational pause, because they don't need to. Russia has significant forces, fresh forces, who have yet to be committed to this fight. We have seen some rotations in the southern Zaporizhia region near the town, the village of Robotino. We've seen, some of the mobilized regiments be rotated in. These are regiments that I believe were held in reserve because of the severity of the fighting, they were brought in. But I think it's the 25th Combined Arms Army is still in reserve, hasn't been committed yet. And so I think the Russians will be able to keep the pressure, and they should keep from, again, look at my eyes, Jeff, look at my eyes. They should keep the pressure because that's what a military guy would do. You don't let up. You got the enemy down. You've struggled so hard to get to this point. You've received this combat power, this billions of dollars of Western military technology brought in that was designed to destroy you. And you've absorbed it, pushed it back, destroyed it. And you've sacrificed a lot to get to this point. And you're right. You know, this is like being in a boxing match and you've been hitting the guy in the side long enough, hitting him in the shoulder, and his arms start to drop. And so right as his arms start to drop and he's not protecting his face, you say, well, I'm just going to back off a little bit and just jab. No, you want to come in and just take him out, knock his ass out. That's where the Russians are right now. They've been hitting the Ukrainians. The hands are coming down. They're a little slow. And the Russians just got to go in and pummel the living shit out of them. And I think that's what they're going to do, because that's what a military, because if you don't, the longer you wait, the arms get a little, the hands come back up. Now you're in a fight. I just don't see Russians yielding everything that they fought to gain for because of some. The Russians know mud. Mud will slow things down, but it doesn't mean it's an end to the fight. People can still die in the mud, and they will die in the mud.
All right. Camila Vasky is urging me to mention to the YouTube audience that we're also live on Facebook. Yeah, but the thing is, Camila, we're also live on Twitter, Twitch, Rumble, and Locals. So I think the most efficient way is just to drive people to scottritter.us, because there it links to all the channels.
Are we live on Telegram yet?
No, but we could be.
We should be.
All right, then let's talk about that. We can make that happen.
Okay.
The next question is from Mary near the Ukrainian village in Chicago. Mary's getting worried. Specifically, she's worried about this whole Ukraine fiasco. I believe you, she says, when you say Biden and the U.S. will throw Ukraine under the bus. The problem is, what about blowback? The Ukrainians have a huge diaspora. Did I say it the right way? Diaspora? Diaspora. Diaspora. Yeah, I've got diaspora in the U.S.
I like diaspora. It's cool. That's a good way to talk.
Sometimes when I eat the wrong foods, but that's another thing.
Like my diaspora starts hurting.
They look like us, and they can blend in, and they have an army's worth of weapons we gave them. Will they do 109/11s on the U.S. in revenge? Diaspora. Let me rehearse that while you're thinking. Diaspora. Got it.
I got to watch what I say, because I have to remember who I am in the heart of hearts. But, Nazis aren't brave. They're cowards. Numbers is their thing. Fear and intimidation is their thing. These aren't the kind of guys to go out and, wage the kind of, you know who's not a coward? Islamist terrorists. I despise them. But they're not cowards. Those bastards will put on a suicide vest and go up and blow up something. They're willing to give their lives for their cause. They'll wade into people with knives, knowing at the end of the day they're going to get shot by a cop, but they're trying to slash as many people as possible. They're insane. They're criminal. They're sick, but they're not cowards. Nazis are cowards. They don't do this kind of stuff. They like to shave their head, put on tattoos, and get a whole bunch of them parade around torches together. Power in numbers. I'm not afraid of Ukrainian Nazis. They live right down the road. They wanted to get me. They could have got me a long time ago. Hell, I waded in to Ellenville. I went to their damn little monument, and I stood there, and I, well, can't say what I did, but I I didn't desecrate physically their monument. But look, Bandera's a pig scum. So is Roman Shushkevich. So is Semen Petliura, and so is the other obscure Ukrainian nationalist prick they had statue up there. It's there. I went there and I showed the amount of respect due to those people, which is none. They didn't do a damn thing. They're fucking cowards. Every single one of them. All the little Banderas loving pieces of shit around here. They don't have the courage to stand up and do anything. I'm not worried about the Ukrainians. They will go back to little rat holes, or they'll figure out that the best thing to do is be honest about their pathetic history and realize that the best way forward is to one to trying to learn to live in peace and harmony with their neighbors and be a good American by respecting the fact that we are a melting pot of ideas and values where people learn to live together, without prejudice. But a Ukrainian Nazi can't do that. They believe they're the fucking Superman. They believe that they are, the superior race. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm a fucking mutt. Okay? I'm an American mutt. Ain't no pure blood here, you little Ukrainian Nazi pieces of shit. So bring it on. You want to do a 109/11? Start here. Start with me. You won't get anywhere. Now, I'm tired of these people. I'm tired of their fucking hate-filled lives. Damn it. We had people die in World War II to stop this ideology. And yet my country is pouring hundreds of billions of dollars in to keep this sickness going. The Canadian Parliament is giving a fucking standing ovation to these people. This is sick. So the best thing in the world would be if they expose themselves by trying to carry out a 9/11. Because then good Americans like me could put them 6 feet in the fucking ground where they belong. And we could begin blowing up their damn statues. The fact that monument still exists is an insult to every American in the world, in the country, and every human in the world. Double hit. Bring it on, Jeff. I'm ready for
the body's on fire.
Conda Strike watching on Rumble. Thanks for the donation, Conda Strike. Everybody else watching on Rumble, be like Conda Strike, won't you? Damn right, Scott. Tell it like it is. From an unfortunate Canadian. P.S. Any thoughts about Poland's extradition request for the geezer, or did I miss that part of the answer?
If Poland has made an extradition request for that 98-year-old man, God bless Poland. Put him on trial, keep him alive, hang him by the neck until dead. Or put him up in for his firing squad. The fucker killed people. He's a murderer. There is no statute of limitations on murder. And Angel, firstly, she's going under surgery, Jeff. We have to wish her well.
No, it's a he. And I'll tell you about him. I correspond with him.
Okay. Why didn't you tell me in advance? Angel, I apologize.
How would I know to tell you that angels can be any gender, right?
I guess so.
Exposing
my prejudice.
Yeah, all I know is this person identifies as a male, I think. No, I regularly exchange emails with him. He's a very nice man. But where is that comment? Let me see if I can find the comment you're talking about.
At 12:32 p.m., a Facebook comment from Angel Firstly. There it is. See, we care about our audience.
Yes, we do. And I know this person's real name, but I don't think he wants it.
No. Don't say the real name.
No. Well, that's how I know it's a male. Okay. Also, this person, very respectful, he refuses to refer to you by your first name or address me by my first name. It's always Mr. Norman, Mr. Ritter.
Wow.
But he refers to himself by his first name. Very, very humble. All right. That's a little behind the scenes info on Angel Firstly. Good luck to you, Angel. I hope it goes well. Stay in touch. Let us know. We'll be pulling for you. We're not that religious, but maybe we'll offer you some secular prayers. Foo from Chicago. After what just happened in Nagorno-Karabakh, will the Armenian people now turn on Russia and demand to join NATO instead?
Well, that's an interesting question, but because it implies that Russia's to blame somehow. First of all, let's just make things very clear. Nagorno-Karabakh is Azerbaijani. It was during the Soviet Union. It was during Tsarist times. And it was during the present, the states. In 1993, Armenia and Nagorno-Karabakh launched what's called the First Nagorno-Karabakh War, in which they the Armenians pushed the Azeris out of 20% of their territory, creating a land bridge between Armenia and Nagorno-Karabakh, where a population of about 150,000 Armenians live. They've lived there for thousands of years. Some of the oldest churches in the region are in Nagorno-Karabakh. There's no doubting that that population that lives there is almost homogeneously ethnic Armenian. But politically speaking, Nagorno-Karabakh is part of Azerbaijan. Always has been. Even when Nagorno-Karabakh declared independence, the Armenians did not incorporate it into Armenia. And when the Armenians launched, or when the Azerbaijanis launched the second Nagorno-Karabakh war, one of the conditions of the ceasefire, because the Armenian army was crushed in 4 days, one of the conditions of the ceasefire was that our Nagorno-Karabakh be recognized as Azerbaijani. And part of the deal was that because it is part of Azerbaijan, the Nagorno-Karabakh army needed to disarm. It didn't. Russian peacekeepers went in there to protect the Armenian population, but the Russian peacekeepers can't forcefully make the Armenians disarm. So the Azerbaijanis launched a short one-day conflict, and crushed them, got them to surrender. This is Armenia's fault, straight up. After what happened in Nagorno-Karabakh, Nagorno-Karabakh is Azerbaijani territory legally. What the Armenians are doing is breaking the law. And the current prime minister of Armenia is a man who has insulted Vladimir Putin, insulted Russia, and turned his back on him. I mean, the Russians are doing everything possible to save this guy, but he's committing suicide. The Armenian people hate him because he gave up Nagorno-Karabakh, but he had no choice because Armenia's army wasn't capable of defeating Azerbaijan's army. And now Russia's the one to blame, because the peacekeepers aren't going to go to war for Armenia. Peacekeepers don't go to war. The idea of peacekeepers is to keep the peace, not to pick a side. What the Armenians do is up to Armenia, but going to NATO isn't an option. Again, Armenia, look at Ukraine. That's your future. Do you want it? Be my guest. Look at Georgia. They said no. Wow, things are starting to happen there. The Russians are starting to engage economically. Things are looking up. Just tell Samantha Power to stick it where the sun don't shine. She, of course, is the head of USAID, who's going in with a big bribery package, along with Ms. Kim, who's a State Department official responsible for the region. Don't trust the Americans as far as you can throw them.
Speaking of which, we have another podcast called The Scott Ritter Show, which we stream only on Rumble.
Oh, there it is, yeah.
So go to scottritter.us if you want to find the link to our Rumble channel or our Locals channel. That's the only place where you can see the Scott Ritter Show. It's every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific. And episode 46, which streams tomorrow, is Intricacies of the Armenia-Azerbaijan Conflict.
Yep, I spoke with, interviewed a very experienced Russian-Armenian politician. I mean, he's a Russian citizen of Armenian descent, served in the Duma, is a Russian colonel, and currently is the director of a think tank that deals with this area. Fascinating interview, and I learned a lot. I think anybody who watched it would learn a lot as well.
Okay, I thought that I had his name here somewhere. It's difficult to say. Maybe I don't have it. Yes, here it is.
Yep, Semyon Bogdasarov.
Okay, and that's tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern, 9. No, I'm saying that back. No. Let me try to figure out what part of the country is which.
6 p.m. Pacific.
9 p.m. Eastern. 9 p.m. Eastern. Okay, got it. Still adjusting. I still have jet lag.
No, you need to get that. You need to get that fence behind you.
That's it. That's what's throwing me for. You like that, don't you? You think it looks better when I have that, right?
I do, but that's just me. I'm a man of very simple tastes.
Okay, all right. Princess 4444 from England. Please explain how the Western aid for Ukraine works. We know there are munitions, weapons, and military equipment sent, as well as monetary aid. Does Ukraine use some of that money to buy more weapons as well as getting military equipment? Or is that $140 billion spent on other things like salaries, humanitarian aid, etc.?
A certain amount of the money, which, and it's not the majority, goes to procuring weapons for Ukraine. That money doesn't go to Ukraine. That money goes, for instance, if we're trying to upgrade or expand our artillery production, we put that money into U.S. defense contractors who build artillery shells. Or we put into refurbishing M1 tanks, things of that nature. So the money doesn't go to, it's not like Ukraine gets money and then they go around and buy American weapons. The money goes to defense contractors. But a significant money, the majority of the money that we give is cash to them that they use to fund. We pay the salaries of the Ukrainian government officials. We pay the salaries of the Ukrainian army. We pay the salaries of the Nazis. Yeah, I said it. We pay the salaries of the Nazis. We fund their VA, so we pay for the wounded Ukrainians. We pay the pensions of Ukrainians. We do all the things in Ukraine that we don't do here at home. If you're an American, that just piss you off. Pisses me off. I'm not saying that Ukrainians don't deserve help. They don't deserve. But the point is, you know, if I'm an American, I just believe America first. Take care of the problems at home. And if you got stuff left over, my wife would get really pissed off if at Christmas time I went around and bought presents for everybody in the neighborhood. But under the tree, we had nothing because I had no money left. I gave it all away. I think she'd be like, OK, why don't we buy what we need to satisfy our, you know, family needs, wants and desires. And if we have something left over, then we can go out and be, you know, very generous to people. I have no problem with generosity. But to do for Ukraine what we refuse to do here at home is especially in support of this cause. Again, I just point to the Canadian Parliament cheering on the 90-year-old Nazi. Please understand that Ukraine is governed by Nazis. Zelensky is a Nazi. He's a Jew. He's a Nazi. He gives medals to Nazis. He embraces Nazis. He allows them into his government. His bodyguards are Nazis. He's a Nazi. Just happens to be Jewish. That would get us kicked off of YouTube, too.
All right. We're taking advantage of our freedom here. This is the free speech zone. Let's see.
Yeah, but remember the pallets of money in Afghanistan. Do you remember the duffel bags of money being put on the helicopter by the Afghan president who's leaving? Do you remember the duffel bags of money found in all of the Afghan warlords as the Taliban came in? Now you know where the money went. And in Ukraine, fully 60% of every 60 cents to the dollar that goes in there doesn't go. When I say funding pensions and all that, that's only the 40 cents that's left over of the 60 cents of the dollar that go into the pockets of all these corrupt pricks, including Zelensky, who stole $400 million, according to Seymour Hersh.
Gus of Perth, again from Western Australia. A lot of Australians checking in today. In a previous episode, you said that a person in Hong Kong was extradited to the U.S. for violating semiconductor sanctions in Russia. If Hong Kong is part of the Republic of China, how did China's law allow extradition to the U.S.?
That is a great question, one that I have asked myself. I just haven't gotten the answer to it. I'm only repeating what the news said, and I did check the news story to make sure I didn't get it wrong. But there was a person who was extradited from Hong Kong for violating U.S. sanctions about semiconductors. I would have imagined the Chinese would have prevented that. Again, what's that word we use, Jeff? The asterisk.
Yes, we'll come back.
We shall put an asterisk on that one, and I shall answer it on Friday. I will research that.
All right. Let's see if we can find some questions coming in live. This was from YouTube before. Hopefully, Bhagavad Gita followed us over here. Why did the Canadian House Speaker resign so he could go join the SS? Boom, boom. Okay, that's not really
a question. A joke.
All right. It's hard to be reading these in advance while I'm also doing this live.
You should get help.
Yeah, we got it. I think perhaps starting next Tuesday. Lumpy, so which country's politicians are officially dumber than Canadians who apparently do not know what side they fought for during World War II? Whose politicians are more clueless?
Ooh. I got that answer. I got it. I really do. American.
That's your imitation of Horshack. Remember Horshack from Welcome Back, Cotter?
Yeah. Great show.
Yeah.
John Travolta was in that show.
Yeah. So you have America. The answer. Go ahead, Horshock. America. Okay. We knew that.
American politicians. We're the ones who in 2018 voted for an amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act that banned expending U.S. taxpayer money in support of the neo-Nazi Azov Battalion, because we called them out in the amendment, which passed, by the way, as being white supremacist Nazis. The same people who asked for that amendment and voted for that amendment in the same Congress, same chambers in 2022, when people like Marjorie Taylor Greene said, "We're funding Nazis." You lie! You lie! There are no Nazis. This is Russian propaganda. The same assholes who are saying that are the ones who helped draft the amendment and voted for the amendment, because apparently there are fucking Nazis in Ukraine.
Here's a theory about the extradition request. Maybe he wasn't in Hong Kong at the time of his arrest.
I literally have to do the research. I agree, because it's not something I would imagine China would allow. But
okay, so there's a possible answer.
Yeah,
well, let's see if I can find some other questions coming in live.
Well, VTX 1104 says would have said Germany, and I agree with you. The Germany is pretty stupid, but no, there is no but. The Germans are pretty stupid. Their politicians are absolutely abhorrent, especially their chancellor, especially their defense minister, especially their foreign minister. There are some bright spots in German political life, though, but not much. When I started criticizing Germany, I had a lot of Germans not correct my sentiment. They said my heart's in the right place, but correct my factual structures, I guess, about German government. And they have educated me that it's very hard for the German people to actually change the government because of the way it works. This parliamentary government, we vote for a party, the party gets to pick the slate. It's, so it's tough. But again, we know Germany put 80,000 people in the streets of Magdeburg about a week ago to protest against the war. So they have it in them. They used to be able to put a couple million people in Nuremberg to give the Nazi salute to Adolf Hitler. So I'd like to see them put a couple million people in the street right now to give the one finger salute to Olaf Scholz. Excuse me, Jeff. I'm spun up and I'm being very crude.
No. I like it. I think we all like it. This guy's on fire. Here's a question that was submitted in advance and also coming in live as well. So he really or she really wants an answer. This is on Raiders 2021 on Rumble. Can't the P-8 aircraft carry armaments? How could they tell the difference between a sono buoy versus a torpedo being dropped?
Answered the question. Of course, they can carry weapons. They can carry they can carry torpedoes. They can carry depth charges. And they carry these sono buoys, which basically get dropped in and are used to locate targets. So you'll drop sono buoys to triangulate your target. And then once you find the location, you get a lock on it, you hit it with the weapon. I think there's different signatures. The torpedo itself would be tracking, so there's a different signal associated that. So if you're a submarine in the water, you can tell the difference between a sonar buoy. Ooh, there we go. That's sending out signals to locate you, and then something that's actually tracking in on you, so you could tell the difference. And so if they did this, I would imagine the submarine would be sending signals, and we're being actively tracked, and then boom, there you go.
All right. Here's another question coming in on Rumble from JRODDZ. I wonder what kind of thought went into coming up with that handle.
J-Rods.
Thoughts on Russians, Lavrov slamming the West in his speech at the UN General Assembly, accusing Western allies of neo-colonialism, calling the West empire of lies? ?
Well, when Lavrov speaks truth, he speaks truth loudly. What problem do you have with this? I mean, I have a problem with it because I'm embarrassed because he's telling the truth. We are allies of neo-colonialism. What the hell do you think France is doing in Africa? Benevolence, Mother Teresa type missionary work? No, they're exploiting Africa, exploiting their former colonies through this France-Afrique form of neo-colonial domination. And we enable it. So Lavrov's calling it out. And the West is the empire of lies. Tell me where we're telling the truth. Let's start with Ukraine. Tell me where America has told the truth about Ukraine. Ready, set, go. How much time do we have left before the lash?
I don't know. I don't see it.
But the point is, you wouldn't be able to give me an answer. I'd get hit by the lash before you could come up with an answer, because we aren't telling the truth. We're lying about everything. And Lavrov simply calling it out.
Okay. Well, you beat the whip, that's for sure.
That's too bad. I was in a whipping mood today, you know?
Oh, I didn't know that you were a mess.
Not that way, Jeff. Not that way. Good Lord.
All right. Easy. Here's a question from Akash in Mumbai. Is it possible that the missing F-35 is a new marketing strategy of the U.S. military to show the world that the stealth mode of F-35 works? With this kind of stealth capabilities, isn't it possible for the F-35 to penetrate at least S-400, if not S-500? I think Akash is showing off with his knowledge.
I think Akash is. First of all, the first sentence is humorous. I like that, Akash. That's humor. But then you blew it by trying to get serious with the second part. So, but no, first of all, how can you be, if a tree fell in the woods and nobody heard it, did the tree fall in the woods? If a stealth fighter goes missing in an area where there is no radar to look for it, did it really go missing? Is it really stealthy? It didn't show off anything. It's just an absolute malfunction on the part of the aircraft and the pilot, and they're going to investigate it. Look, the F-35 is a horrible airplane. A report just came out about the maintenance of this aircraft. 55% of the aircraft are non-operational at any given point because of maintenance difficulties. Someone said it's going to cost us $100 billion over the course of the next X number of years just to maintain this aircraft. We can't afford it. We really can't afford this aircraft. It's a horrible waste of money. It's not a very good airplane. That's what it is. The S-400, I believe the Russians have a software package that allows the radar and the accompanying electronics to find it. The S-500 was built specifically to locate F-35s, B-2s, B-21s. So, yeah, they'll be shot down.
Here's someone with a name who rolls off the tongue almost as easily as disarmament in the time of perestroika rolls off one's tongue. Fedor Abraxas Kalignatsaros.
Kalignatsaros. Kalignatsaros.
Oh, you can actually say it the correct way. Good for you. Are right-wing militants cooperating and or supporting Banderites in Ukraine? And will there be a resurgence of Nazism in Europe post-war?
Well, yes. I mean, the Banderites have basically subsumed all right-wing militant activity under a single umbrella. So the answer to that one is yes. What's happening in Europe? Look what's happening in Europe. In Germany, because of the absolute abysmal performance of the government, the AfD, which is a conservative party, some people are a little concerned about how far right they are allegedly leaning. I've been schooled by the Germans not to emphasize that too much, but the AfD is a conservative party. Michelle Le Pen in France? She's the head of a right-wing party. She, ran a close second to Macron in the polling. She could become the leader. We already see this, the Georgiana Maroney or Maloney or whatever. I'm not too good with names. The Italian prime minister, she leans to the right. I think what we're seeing in Europe is the end of liberal democracy and the resurgence of a more conservative authoritarianism that is just the natural byproduct of failing societies. Germany is a failing community. The governments of the leading liberal democracies are failing abysmally. And I do think we're seeing a trend in that direction. Now, if they can recover politically or economically, I think you might be able to nip it in the bud before it goes too extreme. But you know, as economies fail, so does societies, and as societies fail, so do the mechanisms that keep people from falling into violence. And if Germany and France and everybody else continues to collapse economically and society, their society, respective societies collapse, you could see the kind of violence that existed in the streets of Germany in the 1920s and 1930s, and we know where that led us.
All right, let's do one more question from Northern Nevadan on Rumble. The consequences of this war. Yes, I remember you told me the last time. We won't hold that against him, though. The consequences of this war will continue for generations. How do you envision the reconstruction of Ukraine? Last question for this week's episode.
Well, I mean, there's the easy way and there's the hard way. The easy way right now is just to call it quits and stop and ask the Russians to give them some form of the generous terms that were offered in the March ceasefire agreement that they had signed off on, knowing that they've lost forever the four territories and Crimea, and then ask the Russians to have the Chinese bring in the Belt and Roads Initiative and get some help there. Maybe even to go to Europe and say, let's do some of that G20 infrastructure development over here too, and you know, get everybody to chip in and try and rebuild Ukraine. Europe is exhausted by Ukraine, so the help's gonna have to come out elsewhere. I think the Russians could be inclined, and this is one of the reasons why the Russians haven't been bombing Ukraine into the Stone Age, because they don't want to create a situation where you have to, you know, rebuild everything. It would help if you're going to be rebuilding Ukraine that the train still worked, that the highway still worked, that the bridges still worked, that the railroad, that the tunnels still worked. Russians are thinkers, and I think Russia would be in a position to help facilitate that. I don't think they're going to take the lead on it, but they could work with the Chinese to get some of that investment into Ukraine to get it back up on its feet, so that Ukraine is generating income that generates taxes, that it helps with funding of these programs, so that you can not be totally dependent upon outside powers. That's one way. The other way is to say, no, we're going to fight until the bitter end and everything gets destroyed, and understand that Russia is not going to come in and rebuild that. China will have no incentive to do that. Nobody will. And then Ukraine will just be this rotting cesspool of a nation that's going to sink into its own excrement over the course of the next several decades.
All right. That'll do it for this week's episode of Ask the Inspector. The lightning round means that Scott answers every question in 3 minutes or less, and we keep it to 1 hour. Join us Friday night for the loquacious version, 2 full hours of our favorite weapons, Inspector, at 8 p.m. Eastern time. A reminder to go to Scott Ritter Extra. In fact, don't just go there. Subscribe to our Substack if you haven't already. And this is one of Scott's best articles ever. And read it for yourself, judge for yourself. And if you'd like to hear the interview that is the companion piece to this, that's at Malcolm Burns' Substack. There it is right there. And that's what it looks like. It's a mixture of music and commentary and Scott explaining his addiction to war. It's quite interesting. And if you would like to buy Scott's book, we are selling autographed copies at scottrittermerch.com. By the way, I know there's a bunch of URLs we're throwing at you, and I know it's ridiculous. We're in the process of consolidating everything into one website. But for now, go to scottrittermerch.com. If you would like a copy of his book, autographed, that's the book I mentioned earlier that rolls right off the tongue. Perestroika. And also, we're selling t-shirts at the same website. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, beloved audience. We'll see you on Friday night, as usual, 8 p.m. And that'll do it for this week's show. I just have to figure out how to get out of here. I will. There we go.